Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning, good morning. It's April 1st, 2022. April Fool's Day, right? All the pranks are getting played. But this actually was a special day for me. This was actually my first anniversary. March 31st, 1997 was initially when I first got sober. And was in really the first time that I had ever tried to actually get sober. Really get sober without a bunch of excuses and my life. And I've shared, you know, multiple times, you know, the moment that got me sober, or at least at that moment. And it was just the most humiliating, ego-deflating moment in my life, and it was an opportunity for me to try something different. And it would be my first putting my feet, my toes, into the world of sobriety for the first time with intentions of really trying to get sober, or at least open to the idea of what might come in this new adventure of mine. And it was awesome, you know. It was actually, you know, March 31st. The date is interesting. I think it was the 31st. I don't know if I came to on the 1st. I can't really remember. I just know that it was right around the 31st. And my buddy Scott and my buddy James and I would all celebrate together. And my buddy Scott today is celebrating 35 years. And I just want to say congratulations to my buddy Scott and my buddy James. I don't know how much time James has, but his anniversary is this month, and it's probably like 35 years as well. And I don't know how much time I would have celebrated if I had hung in there. It's not really important. It's not even really important that I identified that this was my very first sobriety date, because, you know, I don't do it about the time. The reason I'm sharing this is because, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out the first time. Right. You know, when I first got sober, I'd shared that the guys from a program had come up to the hospital and asked me if I'd like to join them for a meeting. And just, you know, watching, you know, people shake hands and be friendly and you know, care about one another, just the whole experience was mind-blowing. Mind-blowing to a point where I wanted to be part of it. I was starving for the opportunity to be a good person. I was starving for the opportunity to be accountable. I didn't know it. I didn't know it. I was so deficient in humility. You know, I've said I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. I was so deficient in humility, which to me means other people, caring about anything other than me. I had spent so much time pleasing me, doing what me wanted. And to see people caring about other people, I was like, oh my God, that just looks awesome. And it was awesome. You know, it was a great turning point in my life. You know, and I'd gotten a sponsor. I had a temporary sponsor, Ron M., who was just a huge part of my early success in not drinking. I don't know if I was getting sober. I know that if I want to get sober, I definitely need to not be drinking. But I was just trying to figure out who I was. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize that one of the first things that happens when we try to get sober is we find us, right? And there we are. And I know that I had had enough history of me. And I'm not, you know, I wasn't great, but I wasn't horrible. I was doing what self wanted, which in the eyes of others seemed really bad. You know, I wasn't robbing banks. I wasn't, you know, killing people. You know, and these are obviously pretty extreme, but, you know, I was just off the path. You know, I wasn't that far. You know, if I would have continued doing what I was doing the way that I was doing it, yes, things of the extreme were probably in my future, right? You know, I think that the life that I was living and the people that I was hanging around with, you know, I'd lowered my standards. Or I never even built up my standards. I just kind of came out of being a little kid and went kind of right into, you know, sort of early partying and having fun and chasing girls and drinking. And, you know, I never really had the opportunity to become, you know, a young adult, you know, that society could handle. You know, I watch my kids. I think one of the biggest, greatest gifts of sobriety for me is the ability for at least today to raise a family without having alcohol in our house. You know, I believe that, you know, I, as a kid, watched my parents drink. I remember drinking, kind of imitating my parents at their little bar in their house. I remember just, it was, you know, and I'm not going to say my parents were a bad influence, but they definitely were an influence. They made partying look fun, and I didn't feel there was any, you know, I'd always heard as a kid, you never wanted, like, heroin will kill you. If you do heroin one time, you will be addicted. And I can remember always that message running in the background of my life, but nothing about alcohol, right? Nothing about, I mean, pot was the devil as well, but nothing bad about alcohol. Like, listen, it almost felt like, listen, you can't do any of those other things, but you can drink alcohol. And no fear, no warning. My parents didn't behave badly on it. It seemed perfectly fine. I remember coming home at night and, you know, I'd have to go check in with my parents. We used to have kind of a, my parents called it a rec room. I think they had rec rooms in the 80s, but it was basically just a room that we had a TV in and we sat and watched television and stuff. So I would come into the house and make my way back to my parents, and my mom would be drinking her, I don't, something. She was always drinking something. It was either wine or some, you know, liqueur, and my dad, you know, would maybe be drinking wine, and I would have to go check in with them. And they were always, you know, chilling. You know, it wasn't, I didn't fear coming home to a drunken house, right? They were always on their best behavior, and it just always seemed fine. And so, you know, kind of just growing up and then just transitioning right into alcohol. And someone told me, and I do believe this, that as soon as I picked up a drink or a drug or even maybe even a cigarette, because I started smoking really young, we stopped mentally, spiritually maturing. You know, when I... In March 31st, 1997, that morning that I woke up and finally, you know, and I don't know, I probably still had alcohol in me. It could have even gone to the second, maybe, would be an official sober date. But I remember that day was the first day that I really planned to not drink. And maturity picked up right at that moment. And you know, I think watching men and women, you know, greet each other, care about one another, know each other's name, be concerned how their lives are, was the first step in of a path to maturity or working towards it, I guess. And I was starving to become mature. I was starving. I was sick of being immature. The problem is that I didn't really understand what that meant. And you know, I just jumped in, and I, like I said, I had that first sponsor, Ron M., and then, you know, self started to come back. You know, the dents popped out, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm not sure I like how Ron M. as a sponsor. I liked another person that I thought would be a better sponsor. You know, all of a sudden, like, I'm becoming picky in particular, and which was fine, you know. I always say, find the person that's going to suit you best, but... I remember, you know, being afraid to tell Ron M. that I was going to choose a different sponsor. I didn't want to hurt Ron M.'s feelings. Like, Ron M. give a shit. You know, Ron M. was taking care of Ron M., right? The 12th step. Now that we've done all these steps, my job is to be there for the next alcoholic. And that's what Ron M. was doing. I was the next one, and he stepped in. And, you know, I appreciated it. You know, the way I looked at it early on is that Ron was helping me. It's a lifestyle that I've lived. Me, me, me. Hey, all right, Ron M., thank you. Thank you for helping me. But in the end, I look back and Ron M. was helping him. Ron M. was inconveniencing himself to help another alcoholic. And that is the solution, I think. You know, and there's all a lot of other stuff, but it's basically inconveniencing oneself to help another person. You know, it's easy to help somebody when it's convenient. But to help somebody when it's inconvenient is the kryptonite to alcoholism or self-centeredness. And Ron M. was doing that, and Ron M. was covering his ass. And, you know, I look at it now, and I appreciate that, you know. I just talked to somebody the other day. I shared my story. It's been about, I don't know, maybe a month. And someone came up to me and they go, I remember Ron M. He's in Florida. I said, well, if you see him, tell him I said hi. He probably doesn't even remember me, right? He probably does not even remember me, which is fine. But, you know, the process, that first year and, you know, and then getting that first year and then getting that second year. And, you know, really, you know, I said the other day, spirituality is a lifestyle. Sobriety is a lifestyle. You know, it's a lifestyle for the hour in the room, and then it's a lifestyle for the other 23 that are left in the day. You know, I watched the evolution of my sobriety, and I've, you know, talking about Matt and, you know, how he was sort of my first higher power. And I didn't believe that Matt was God, but I believe that I cared what Matt thought about me. And, you know, that's still that ego and that kind of stuff. But listen, it has to get worked out. It has to kind of go through it. There was a lot of things that I learned early on and that would be exposed. And just the selfishness of myself is so gross. And now when I see it around in other people, I'm just like, ugh, so gross. I wish they could see how they are. But still, pushing through more years and more, you know, I think I was about 4.5 years, and then I took that job over in Easton. I thought I had a firm foundation of program, but I didn't have a firm foundation of a relationship with a higher power or spirituality. You know, I thought I did. I thought I did, but, you know, I didn't. And I remember moving over there and those, you know, I've shared this before. I didn't like the way they ran the meetings. Who cares how they run the meeting? But for some reason, I didn't like it. I didn't like the way they collected the money. I didn't like the way the agenda. And it was just a different meeting. But I, for some reason, like I should have even had an opinion at all. Didn't really care for it. Next thing you know, I'm not going. Next thing you know, that voice shows up. Look how well you've done. And you should have a drink. And I was like, you're right. It didn't take much to push me to the bottle. Didn't take much. It took about 4 things not going my way and me not working a program or having a sponsor. You know, I had a sponsor, but, you know, I was just going to use him from... I was going to move to one city and I was going to use him while he was in a different city. And that, you know, that never works. You know, maybe I was just setting myself up. You know, you have situations that come up in your life and you want to do it. even though everybody tells you you're wrong, you shouldn't, but you want to do it. I don't know. Maybe that was me setting myself up to drink again. Get away from these people that have helped me to get to this point and, you know, go out on your own. And that's kind of what I did. And I started to isolate and I stopped calling. And next thing you know, that voice. And then I started drinking and I could not stop. You know, and just bad behavior would follow, and it was just, and then stupid decisions like, you know, quitting my job. Well, it seemed smart. I look back, it was stupid, but in the end, it was smart, which is weird. But, you know, I quit my job, you know, moved back to our town, and just was drinking like a fool. And I remember working with my buddy, Eddie, and he's like, you know, I can't be in business with you. I just had a customer complaint, said they could smell alcohol on you. And Brown, Eddie knew me. He knew my history. I worked for Ed when I first got sober. Ed had to come pick me up after I got pulled over driving a car while I was on a DUI. Luckily, he was friends with the cop, and the cop, you know, let my dad come get the car and didn't ticket me. But, you know, Ed knew my story. And I, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'll come back to Rehoboth. I'll come, you know, we'll start a business together. I'm good. And I was lying. I was being selfish and not thinking of others. And started that business and invested a bunch of money and just was drinking. I would get the crew together and then I would drive down the road and drink a six-pack of Mike's Hard Lemonade. And smoke cigars and just, I was just in the filth. It's like really a dark part of my life. Then my wife would leave and, you know, I, you know, finally came to my senses and you know, went up to the Colonial House up in Pennsylvania and you know, I was at a bottom and finally came back and you know, would finally start my recovery over. And it was just, it was a trippy time in my life.
Set it up. Oh, consider this.
you go. A little Hootie, what's up? I feel like I might have played that song already. Well, I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, and then, you know, finally getting that up to the Colonial House and picking a new sobriety date, hooking up with my boy Matt, and, you know, trying to reflect on what went wrong. And, I don't think anything went wrong. You know, I am the guy that believes that you or I have to go through everything that I had to go through. You know, I was telling, I have a friend who's married to a guy who is a great guy, just an amazing, amazing guy. But he has gotten himself in a pickle, and it's with like taxes and stuff. And you're like, oh my God. And I was saying to somebody else, I go, we all have our low point in life. You know, some of us it's early, some of us it's in the middle, and some of us it's in the end. But at some point we have a real point in our lives that seems to be pretty low. Mine was early. You know, I hope I continue to keep it as that, as an early experience, and don't re-experience this kind of shit again. But, you know, mine was early. You know, and a lot of people would think, oh, this guy, you know, he's never going to be anything, you know, because it was how my behavior was at the time. But we have an opportunity. We have a chance to change that. Every day we start over. Every day. And you know, when I started to tackle sobriety again, you know, I would realize that I was only, you know, and I've said this, I was just talking to somebody about this. I go, you know, sobriety, there's a lot of self stuff in sobriety. You know, the coin, time, you know, when I had I had gotten sober again and was 2 years into sobriety and had been using pain pills. You know, I'd had an injury, a back injury. And yeah, maybe I took them initially in the beginning the way they were supposed to, but I am an addict and an alcoholic. And I would start taking two and three, and I would run out, and it would be this whole fucking dance. And luckily, when I ran out, I just got off of it. I was like, I would binge on them. You know, I'd have an injury, or my back would flare up. I'd reach out to the doctor. He'd send me a prescription. You know, and I'd have to go, oh, I need the muscle relaxers, and I need the ibuprofen, and of course I need the Vicodin or whatever it was I was hoping to get, which I never would took the muscle relaxers, and I never took the ibuprofen. I just wanted the pain pills. Then I would binge on them. You know, back then you could get 30 or whatever it was, and you know, they used to make me so sick, but I would take them anyway. They would make me so sick. I remember taking like 5 Vicodin, throwing up in a bucket because I was so sick. And I remember picking the Vicodin out of the fucking vomit and then taking him again. I mean, that's disgusting. That's me. That's me in a bucket right there. And I remember when, because pills, just like alcohol, would make me arrogant. And I would behave and I'd have this way about me, this swagger, this jive turkey kind of bullshit. And, you know, said something or did something that I was just mortified by. And, you know, that's when you have to, you know, ego devastation, complete humiliation. And that's when you have to address whatever it is you're doing. And at the time, it would be pills. And I remember talking to my buddy Matt and saying, listen, I've been taking pain pills. And he's like, really? I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, you're going to have to change your sobriety date again. And I remember self. It's like, I don't want to lose those 2 years. I don't want to stop being able to say that I have 2 years of sobriety. Like, I would rather lie and keep the time than be honest and start over. You know, and that's why it's important. It was important for me and still is important for me to have a sponsor. Because honestly, if I wouldn't have had Matt in my life at the time, I probably wouldn't have said anything. I probably wouldn't have changed my sobriety date. I probably would have quit taking pain pills. I think I definitely had enough of that. But would I have changed my sobriety date? I don't know. You know, I could be celebrating 15 years today. But I, you know, it's like, man, unless you change your sobriety date, you're never going to be sober. And so I started over again. So I had almost 5, then I had 2, and then I was starting over again. And all I could think about was the loss of all that time. all self could think about was the loss of all that time. And I don't mean just like the work and the meetings, but I'm talking about identifying how much time. Sobriety, early on sobriety, there's a lot of self-centered stuff in there, self-serving. There's like a hierarchy in meetings, you know, who's got the most time, and you don't want to be the newcomer, right? It's good to be the newcomer. Enjoy being the newcomer. You know, if I was going to say anything, or at least what I did, it was I just enjoyed the newness of my life. You know, there's a life under the influence, and then there's a life not under the influence. And the life under the influence is a completely different world. You know, my standards were lower. What I cared about was lower. I remember, you know, in my addiction, man, I remember my car was fucking beat up. I had this white Cutlass. The left front fender was blue. The back fender was blue. A couple of the back wheels were different. I mean, the back two side windows, back then, you know, you sat in the back and you had these little windows you could look out. They were both plexiglass because they'd been broken out. Someone stole my car stereo, so they were plexiglass. I mean, this car was a total piece of shit. But that was perfect for me because at the time, I was a total piece of shit. You know, I had no standards. I didn't care about anything. I had one thing in mind, which is get high and party with my friends. That was it. I didn't care about making money. I didn't care about my future. I didn't care about, you know, how I looked. I didn't care about the car I drove. I just didn't care. All I cared about was just me being partying and getting high. And, you know, so when I finally started to get sober, you know, I started to care again about myself. I mean, March 31st, 1997, I was living in a two-bedroom dump that my uncle owned. And he was nice enough to rent it to me, so thank you. But it was a dump. You know, where we live at the beach, and, you know, you can take two-bedroom apartments and put four bunk beds in it and shove 19 kids in there, and they are all happy because, you know, it isn't about the house. It's about being at the beach and working on the summer. And but I was living in one of these apartments, and it was a dump. And it looked like a dump. I remember when I moved here, I dragged all my tweaker bullshit from San Diego all the way here in a U-Haul. I could have left everything. But for some reason, I needed it, right? And I remember dragging it all here and then dragging it to that other apartment. And I lived in a two-bedroom dump with a bunch of crap. And I was okay with it. I mean, I just had lost my way. And so to see people in the program, you know, caring about one another and most of all caring about themselves, you know, and I remember I came in and I didn't know how to care about myself. And people taught me, you know. And it's just been a wonderful experience. And I guess the point of this whole thing was, listen, if you're struggling, or if you've recently picked up and you're trying to start over, right? Take what you learned. You know, I know there's people out there, and they'll love to tell you, I didn't need to drink again to stay sober, and they're very proud of it. They're self, like, you know, who cares, right? Who fucking cares how much fucking time you have? You know, I can tell you, it ain't all white as snow sobriety, right? It's the quality. And if you can learn something, if you picked up or you drank again or you ate again or did whatever it is we did, you know, try to figure out what was that about. You know, who was that serving? You know, try to analyze it. Try to do it a little differently. You know, there's definitely things that I've learned, you know, that I shouldn't do. You know, I don't hang out in bars, right? People are like, you should go to the bar. Just drink seltzer. Like, who the fuck? First of all, who the fuck wants me in a bar? Nothing worse than being in a bar getting your drink on with some sober guy hanging out. It just makes me look bad. But there's a lot of stuff to be learned. And, you know, it's awesome. And so I guess just hang in there. Keep at it, right? Confess your sins. Start over. Who cares about time? It's about quality. Excuse me. So I just wanted to, you know, it's been a weird week. We watched the movie Coda. If you haven't seen the movie Coda, it won the Oscar. If you didn't realize that, you know, behind all the Will Smith bullshit, felt bad about that. But Coda is an amazing movie. Watch it. It won the Oscar. It's such a good movie and a lot of great messages in it. You know, the whole Will Smith... excuse me. You know, I did a podcast the other day. I was very annoyed by the Will Smith thing. And I did a podcast, this podcast, and I started the podcast and I was really kind of giving an opinion about something that I really shouldn't have. And I didn't do the podcast. I never posted it. I just didn't finish because I wasn't in a good way. It bothered me. You know, I'm a big fan of Will Smith. I just hated that whole situation. But hey, you know, we're starting to see, you know, it sounds like things are getting worked out. Will's made some apologies and Chris Rock apologized. And I hope they're working it out. You know, it was a shame to see that. And I think Will Smith probably regrets it. You know, and I guess if you make a mistake, you know, try to clean it up and learn from it and try never to do it again, right? But it was a shame. And so I'm glad they're working it out. But anyway, I hope everyone's having a great day. A happy anniversary to all my friends, and we'll catch you later.